Well, thank you. And I'm not actually shifting completely to individual. I took a look at this, you know, the learning objectives for this little seminar, and decided to go kind of through our community-based participatory research process in terms of how we engage the military community to help us with our intervention development. And our program is called Strong Family, Strong Forces. It's a home-based reintegration program for military families with young children. And this is the required award number from the Department of Defense, which we have to put on all of our presentations. And I have no relationships to disclose. And, you know, in all of our presentations, we always put up kind of an acknowledgement slide. And if we were to be comprehensive about this, this slide would be about 15 slides long, because we could not be doing this project without our community collaborators. Many thanks to the Military Family and Support Centers of Massachusetts and Rhode Island, especially. This is our team over here, Strong Family, Strong Forces. So here in this presentation, what I'm going to do is I'm going to describe the first phase of a three-phase study that's designed to develop and test a home-based program for military families, returning service members who have very young children, birth to five. And as I said, describe the CBPR, or community-based participatory research model, used to engage the military community, which was quite an endeavor, actually, from the very beginning. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that. And then I want to close with identifying both challenges and implications for social work practice and research with military communities, because there is certainly a lot of room for improvement and a lot of work to be done. So basically, what led to this study? I kind of want to give you guys a little bit of a background. Right now, I think it's the most recent numbers from 2010, about 2 million military children have had at least one parent deployed. When I say at least one parent, that means, you know, one person went at least once. Maybe both went, maybe, you know, one went and then the other, maybe they went at the same time. Maybe one went multiple times. And of these 2 million, kids who are having this experience, the vast majority, I think about 42%, are under the age of five. And there's not that much research on OEF, OIF, I guess, deployments. And OEF is Operation Enduring Freedom to Afghanistan, and OIF is Operation Iraqi Freedom in Iraq, which is theoretically closed at this point, but there are certainly quite a few service members just over the border in Kuwait who kind of travel into Iraq on a daily basis. But technically, they are not in Iraq anymore. And I think to date, only, you know, two or three studies have been published on the military demographic of families who have kids under the age of five. And we decided to focus on the birth to five because the impact of deployment and separation on that age group is significant. The majority of brain development happens between the ages of birth to five. It's very important to have a strong parent-child relationship, well, always, but certainly during that phase of life. Parenting and co-parenting roles, practices, and stresses are different for that group, too. It's very different to have, you know, a screaming toddler in the middle of the night than, you know, a 17-year-old adolescent. Communication styles are different, certainly. Well, one would hope, at least. I'm sure you guys are familiar with, you know, all the recent media and, you know, literature also on the impact of, you know, combat exposure resulting in PTSD, injury, both the visible and the invisible. Visible meaning, you know, you see the amputee come back who's, you know, up at, you know, what used to be Walter Reed, and then PTSD, the invisible wounds of war, which may not necessarily be obvious at a glance. And, of course, the impact of, you know, disability and all that kind of stuff. So what is this project? We're trying to develop and test a home-based reintegration program for OEF, OIF service members and their kids. We're using a mixed method approach, and it's intervention development research. So, and this is the phase that I'm going to talk about today, mostly. Phase one, this was the first year of the project. Qualitative interviews and focus groups with over 90 participants, and these are service members, their partners, people who we call key informants, and everybody's here is public health, so just people who know about the military and have information about things that we as civilians might need to become familiar with. let me tell you, it was certainly a very steep learning curve, being a civilian trying to learn about the military. Phase two, we actually developed the pilot program, Strong Families, Strong Forces, piloted with nine families, all of whom completed. And now we're actually in the midst of phase three, the randomized controlled trial, where we are testing this intervention with 128 plus families. And the model initially, and this is kind of an important, you know, key take-home point, which I'll get to at the very end, the current model is a treatment condition versus a waitlist condition. Initially, when this grant was written and funded, it was a treatment condition versus a treatment as usual condition. In phase one, treatment as usual came out that, well, there is no treatment as usual. So what are you going to do? Are you going to sit there and say, oh, you know what? Well, the third phase of our study, half the people are going to get this intervention that's supposed to be helpful, and the other half of you are just going to have to do your, you know, two-hour-long self-report measures, get paid, you know, kind of a little bit of money, but that's it. No intervention for you. Best of luck. Decided to do a design change, obviously. So now we have treatment versus waitlist. And we began that phase of the study back in August 2010. What is unique about this study? Again, the birth to five age bracket, and we're working primarily with National Guard and Reserve families, which the stressors and strains are very different. NGR folks, that's kind of what we call them, they aren't living on installations. They're not active duty. They don't live on this base with, like, everybody around in uniform and lots of people who are kind of having their same experience. They're embedded in the civilian community. A lot of times their neighbors don't even know that they are in the military or affiliated. Certainly in Massachusetts, public sentiment towards the military is quite different than, you know, Fort Hood, Texas, where, you know, it's rah-rah, hoorah, you know, military pride. And in Massachusetts, you know, people get a lot of pushback about being in the military. And it's a little bit more liberal, I guess I'll say. As I said, we're using a mixed method research model, very much based in community-based participatory, practices. Our outcome measure, we do have a number of self-report forms, but we're also using a videotaped parent-child assessment called the Kroll procedure, which is certainly something, again, to kind of think about if you're doing intervention development research. And, you know, it's been an interesting experience using this videotaped observational measure in the home with these families. I'll get to that a little bit later. And this is an efficacy trial and you know, compared to a waitlist open trial, which, you know, to the medical model researcher, maybe we won't be able to say what we could have said about, you know, does this intervention work and how well does it work and what does that mean for the three-month follow-up. But again, it comes down to kind of, you know, social work practice and also ethical obligations. We just felt we could not withhold anything from these families. So that's why the design kind of switched. And, I mean, the Strong Family, Strong Forces program, it's home-based and it's relationship-focused, which is very different than a lot of what is offered for, you know, military communities and families who are seeking services. There's not really any, you know, mental health-oriented home-based stuff going on, and certainly not much relationship-focused, you know, pieces. There's a lot of, you know, cognitive behavioral therapies out there that are individually based that happen in office, but that is not really working so well for Guard and Reserve populations. And also, I mean, trying to do CBT with a family who has, like, a three-year-old, like, that three-year-old, I mean, certainly there is TF-CBT, I don't know. We try to focus on the relationship piece a little bit more. So this is kind of a slide that's the overview of, you know, what does this, you know, intervention development process look like from a CBPR perspective? You know, again, phase one, the interviews in the focus group, and reviewing the relevant literature to kind of get our, you know, our sea legs in this community and try to figure out what the relevant issues are. Then we developed the Strong Family, Strong Forces program model, integrating what people had to say in phase one, which is another key, you know, critical component of this research. Ran the pilot program by our community stakeholders, and then, again, actually revised the program. And then in phase three, which we're in the midst of now, we're about halfway through enrollment. We're in that efficacy testing phase. And this is what it is. I mean, I've kind of talked about, you know, the overarching goal is to reduce the impact of deployment separation and legacy, meaning, you know, combat-related stress, PTSD, any kind of mental health concerns or adjustment stuff. you know, on parenting and the parent-child relationship, and there's nothing out there that really kind of does that. As I said, primarily NGR families who live within 90 miles of Boston, and we had to cap it somewhere because it's a lot of time in the car, and, you know, 90 miles does not necessarily mean an hour and a half in the car in Boston rush hour traffic in the surrounding area. 93 is parking lot, you know, 75% of the day. Focusing on families with young children, you know, and our kind of modality here is home-based, flexible, and multiple family configurations. Flexibility is another kind of take-home point. By flexibility, it means, yes, we go to the home. It means we work weekends. We work nights. We operate outside of the standard hours of the VA and the vet center, kind of 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., make your appointment, three strikes, you're out rules. What is the program? It's 8 modules, possible adaptations for the waitlist families, which I can get to at some point, but basically, you know, covering 8 areas that stem from what families told us in phase one about what would be helpful to them, you know, in terms of this reintegration adjustment period. We like to call ourselves culturally responsive. You know, we do have a module that's dedicated to what is your military identity and how does it kind of impact your family life and functioning. We call ourselves a universal intervention. So, you know, a lot of times to be eligible for something, you have to, you know, have something wrong. You have to be diagnosed with PTSD in order to get cognitive processing therapy. You have to meet a certain criteria to get bumped up on the wait list at the VA. We're universal. So if everything's fine, great. We'll still come on over and help you work on, you know, kind of a prevention focus there. And then our outcomes, you know, it's our primary outcome is the parent-child relationship. So that is pretty different than what else is out there at this point. And because, you know, I included the slide, the phase one demographics, you know, because I'm here talking about the CBPR process, and this is kind of the, you know, the crux of what launched this intervention development project. And, you know, we're 83, I mean, just a couple things to kind of, you know, draw your attention to. We're primarily National Guard and Reserve, 83%. People had, you know, their main concerns actually, you know, according to DSM criteria, weren't PTSD. Parenting stress and depression and anxiety, which is interesting because when you think military returning service members, what do you think? You think, oh, PTSD. Oh, lots of substance abuse. Oh, the suicide rates are off the charts and something's wrong. But it's actually more depression and anxiety, which certainly are linked to, you know, some of these other adverse outcomes. But that's kind of what popped in our sample. We are, we do have a primarily, you know, white population, which is different than the military demographic, you know, across the country, which is kind of interesting. I think it's a function of where we are and the fact that Guard and Reserve kind of attracts a different population than active duty. And we're also older. Our population is older than, you know, standard military demographics. Again, I think because Guard and Reserve people are in for a little bit longer. And this is kind of what I was just talking about earlier. You know, on the service member self-reports, you know, I mean, very high parenting stress. They were elevated on all anxiety and hostility subscales of the BSI, which is the Brief Symptom Inventory. It's a pretty, you know, reliable and valid measure used widely across studies. 89% of the sample did report post-traumatic stress symptoms using the PCLM, which is kind of a, you know, standard brief screener, 17-item assessment tool for self-reported PTSD. Although only 14 meet criteria for PTSD, you know, there was this recent study by Blisi and colleagues in 2008 where he looked at a sample of OEF-OEF veterans and kind of has this proposal for a different kind of cutoff with the PCLM. Current cutoff for DSM criteria is 50. He's proposing between 30 to 34 as the cutoff for OEF-OIF returning veterans for you know, what is impairing PTSD or PTS symptomology. And the mean for our sample is, you know, we have a mean of 30.63, so we're above that minimum cutoff for most of our folks, which is, you know, just interesting to note. And certainly has a bearing on, you know, what that means for that little kid and those parent-child relationships. interestingly, and this is also kind of a, you know, another take-home point for intervention development, a lot of what you see out there is these stories of a spouse coming in and saying, you know, my husband is just having all of these problems, and he has all this PTSD and doesn't even realize that he has any problems going on, and he thinks everything's fine. That is not actually what we were seeing in our sample. Service members are, you know, endorsing clinically significant levels of, you know, a whole host of, you know, subscales on the BSI and the BDI. But the partners, when they are asked to report about the service member mental health, are saying, oh, no, they're fine. So they're underreporting on the service member symptoms. Very interesting because it's contradictory to what we see kind of out there in the literature. Partners overall doing well, except for some postpartum depression. And you know, both parents are reporting that the child status, you know, are they're sub-threshold on the CBCL, which is the child behavior checklist. So not a lot of significant behavior problems for the kids during reintegration. So the challenges of implementing this program, timing in the deployment cycle, reintegration only. One thing that, you know, people said time and time again during phase one is, what are you doing just doing reintegration? We really need this pre-deployment and during deployment. Kind of missing the boat at reintegration, not exactly your prevention aspect here. We get it, but our funding stream is linked to the PTSD TBI, so that'll be hopefully, you know, a direction for future research. Capacity, because we switched our design change, you know, serving all these opt-in families or these waitlist families who decide to participate after has been quite a challenge. We're still operating, you know, on the same budget with the same amount of staff, it's tough. It's a lot of work, but you know, hopefully it will pay off. Let's see. You know, clinical concerns. I mean, our inclusion criteria right now are you know, within you know, service members got to be back within a year of deployment. You know, some people come back early. Sometimes, you know, they're hearing about this after, you know, their window has passed, so that's tough to deal with. And then also, you know, in the actual intervention, you know, where do you focus? Technically, our outcome measure, parent-child relationship, so we should be focusing on that parent-child relationship. Well, I mean, the co-parenting diet and the couple relationship is also important, certainly has a bearing on the parent-child relationship. How do you balance those needs? Methodological, you know, data collection points for the open trial. We have a pre, a post, and a three-month follow-up. This is challenging because guess what? Sometimes people get redeployed. Maybe they're not available for their three-month follow-up. Maybe they have a training schedule where in the middle of the, you know, intervention time period, they're gone for 6 months. It certainly is going to be interesting to try to figure this out when we get to the analysis piece. And that is, you know, the unit of analysis, the parent-child relationship. What do you do with all those kind of missing time points or different time points than what you had anticipated? You know, and what people told us, I mean, basically I just summarized it in terms of, you know, why we made all of these design adaptations. You know, take-home points, you know, deployment cycle means different things. Not a lot available, so, you know, you can't just leave those waitlist people or the treatment-as-usual people high and dry. You know, people respond differently to what's going on in their family. I mean, that's not really new information for the social work, you know, contingent here. And interestingly, families are willing to seek services that are focused on the kids versus service member mental health. I mean, all these, you know, families are saying, yeah, you know what? We'll talk to you because this is for my kids. It's not for me. Maybe I have problems, maybe I don't, but yeah, you know, if this means that my kid's going to be okay, all right, or hopefully that my kid's going to be okay. And what is working? Interestingly, the military-civilian partnership, most of us are civilians on this project. People are talking to us because we're civilians. A lot of people are still concerned about, you know, who might get what information that they report. Still very looming very, very large in the minds of this population. And I think I've talked about most of these things. Recruitment and retention, that's the last thing. I know I'm short on time here that, you know, I kind of want to drive home here. This, don't read this all, but basically, you know, this is basically a summary that of activity that our staff is engaged in. And this was not budgeted for in either time or money in the original proposal, so a big take-home point, budget for your community partnerships and the time that you need to invest. Our staff goes about once a week to like an 8-hour, you know, long event with the Yellow Ribbon Program. It's called a pre or a post mobilization. And it's a lot of kind of face time with the community to establish trust. Again, I mean, more of the same, kind of just underscoring how much extra effort and extra time it takes to kind of build relationships with this vulnerable community. Lessons learned. Adapt your protocol. Go to the families. Acknowledge your outsider status, you know, when it's applicable. Big one, don't do hit and run research. Don't just, you know, do a survey and leave and, you know, nothing really changes. I think everybody who's presented today has, you know, left the community with something tangible that they can hang on to, which, I mean, that's kind of the big take home for us too. Don't pigeonhole into the PTSD category. It's more than that, you know, certainly more than that. And again, I mean, the big one here is honor the expertise of the consumers, you know. This also enhances participants' willingness to share their experiences in combat and deployment-related stressors to inform development of effective intervention. And then again, I'll give my, you know, prevention plug here. Preventive interventions that incorporate all phases of the deployment life cycle, not just the reintegration, are needed because you can offset these problems if you get them, you know, beforehand. I think that's, you know, pretty much it. If you have any, you know, questions or concerns, Ellen DeVoe is the principal investigator, and I'm the project director. And I don't know if anybody here is military, but we do wish to express our gratitude to community partners and everyone who has served. I think that's it.